Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Cale Teeter and Sujeet Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information about our show, please see our website at azpodcast.azurewebsites.net. Well, hello there, and welcome to the podcast. My name is Sujeet Mello, and I'm a senior consultant at Microsoft based in New Jersey. My focus is helping enterprises leverage our tools and technologies by building custom solutions for them. On Skype from New York, I have my esteemed colleague and all-around Azure guru, Cale Teeter.
Hi, my name is Cale Teeter. I'm also a Microsoft consultant in the New York region. I focus on application development type projects with my customers, specializing in Azure-based solutions.
Great. Great to have you on the call, Cale. So this is our pilot show for this podcast, and I thought I'd just spend a couple of minutes talking about what the podcast is going to be about so that people know what to expect as we put out shows over here. Hopefully we'll try to keep a steady rhythm of shows every week. So what we hope to achieve with this podcast is it's going to be a series of short 10 to 15 minute shows, and we intend to cover one topic in the Windows Azure space. We may also cover some new updates to the Azure platform that are of general interest that came up in the previous week or two. It is not meant to be any sort of competitive discussion. We will mention that, you know, obviously you guys already know this. Amazon Web Services, Google App Engine, Cloud Engine, IBM Smart Cloud, HP Converged Cloud, and to some extent OpenStack, Rackspace, and VMware are all competitors of Microsoft Azure. So you have a choice, and we are here to tell you what Azure has to bring to the table. Hopefully that makes it clear as to what this podcast is about, and hopefully you'll come back and listen to some of the other shows that we have coming down. We have an exciting lineup of material to cover all the various aspects of Windows Azure, one topic at a time. So first off, Cale, let's get one thing out of the way. How do you pronounce this word, A-Z-U-R-E?
Yeah, it's a good question. I hear people pronounce it in many different ways. I've heard Azure, I've heard Azure, many different flavors in between. And from my going to Microsoft conferences and going to people in the know from this space, the premise and what I hear is the pronunciation of Azure. So that's the way I pronounce it. I know it's potato, potato, but that's what I hear.
No, that sounds good. I like it. So it's going to be Azure. That's just so that, you know, we have a consistent naming convention for that. And so let's start with just a couple of basics, okay? So what exactly is the cloud? I think from my perspective, my own internal informal definition of the cloud is any app or service that you provide but you do not host in your data center. Okay, it's very simple. It's where I draw the line as to what is something that's on your premise versus in the cloud. So that's my definition. But, Cale, I've heard there's some more formal definitions for the cloud there.
Yeah, in talking with some of our colleagues, there's actually been a standard put out there by the National Institute for Standards and Technology, and they basically classify cloud and define it by five basic points. It has to be an on-demand self-service type service, in that respect, meaning it's managed and can be changed totally by an end user, doesn't require a lot of programming skills and those types of things. Broad network access is the next bullet point. And what that means is just having the ability to connect to large-scale networks. Obviously, the Internet is one of the biggest ones. Resource pooling would be another point. And what that means is basically having a large pool of machines to pull from instead of you having to micromanage buying servers and racking them and going through that headache. We have a large pool of resources. One of the big tenets is also rapid elasticity. And what that means is being able to shrink and grow on demand. So along with the self-service, we like to be able to, and we classify clouds as something that can scale up very large, very quickly, with minimal effort. And also it's a measured service, so we can be able to measure and have an SLA around these things in order to gauge them.
Wonderful. That's great. That's what I call a formal definition. Thank you, Gail. So the other aspect of cloud, which comes up a lot in my discussions, is a public cloud versus a private cloud, and there is a lot of debate about that these days as to where you should put your stuff. You know, whether you should go with private or public. The way I define public cloud is where you have some sort of a shared infrastructure where you've got this big data center, and within it there is, all sorts of companies hosting their apps and services over there. Your app may be running in one machine, and right next to you there could be another machine running an app for your competitor. And you don't know this. You don't know what that app is, or who that competitor is, or who that company is. But it's a shared infrastructure. You're all in the same data center. Of course, there's security boundaries, and you can't access each other's servers or services without proper authentication. But they're all in the same infrastructure. Is that does that ring a bell here?
Yeah, and it hits on the 5 points I just made about, and those are the things that classify the public. Along with that, we have the alternative, which is the private cloud. And so in the private cloud, when you hear people talk about that, they're like, what the heck does that mean? Because I know what a public cloud is. I've heard about Azure and Google and Amazon. But what's this private cloud all about? And really what that is if you were able to take what we've done in Azure and what others have done and wrap that up in some sort of a way that you could run it inside your own data center. So a single organization is one of the key tenets here. So it has to be owned and managed by the organization that's running it. It's not shared infrastructure with other people. And that's one of the big things. And one of the things to think about, we mentioned two different things here, public and private. There's also the idea of the hybrid. And I think
that's right.
Later podcasts we'll talk about that, which is a lot more common because it's very – most of the time people don't gravitate directly to one or the other. They have a mixture of both.
Yep, that's a good point. Great. All right, so that's a good starting point. So let's jump right into Windows Azure itself. Now, one of the very basic services that Windows Azure offered, as a matter of fact, I think it was the very first service that they offered back in 2009 or whenever they went live. It's been at least 4 years since they went live, was something called a Platform as a Service, or PaaS, as it's very fondly known as in our circles. And I feel this is like the building block of Windows Azure. It's a basic set of compute and storage facilities, right? You get compute nodes, which let you run ASP.NET websites or WCF web services. Every node it can be given a public address so that it appears on the internet via URL. So these nodes can contain standard .NET code. Okay, for those of you who are programmers in our listeners over there, you might know a thing about medium trust, and that's what all this .NET code runs as medium trust. That gives you pretty much wide access in what you can do in .NET, but it doesn't let you, for example, access the file system or access system resources directly, and therefore it just it just prevents you from shooting yourself in the foot when writing these apps. And the other reason why we don't want you to access local resources that are tied to a particular machine is because then that means your app is sticky to a particular machine. And one of the tenets of the cloud is that you want to be able to be not susceptible to any failure. You want to be able to seamlessly move on to another node in case your node goes down. And that's how you improve reliability in your application. Now, in terms of storage, there's three basic storage types that are provided to you. Blobs, which, as the name suggests, allows you to put any kind of binary object. You create containers and you store any sort of binary object in there. There's tables. They're simple name value tables, but they're very fast and they can contain a large number of records. And queues, which allow you to queue items to be processed later by one of the compute nodes. So, these main compute and storage facilities are very highly scalable and reliable, and you can expand upon the number of nodes as your anticipated load increases. Kale?
Yeah, and along with that, Sajid, one of the big things is, when developers are first looking at this from the first time, like, what is the cloud and how do I get started with this? So what's a developer to do to get started? There's a couple things. So the first thing to do is visit the website. You know, windowsazure.com is our main URL to the site. You can look around there. We have developer documentation. That's where the portals manage, all these types of things.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other key pieces would be Visual Studio. While you can develop applications outside Visual Studio, just like you can any ASP.NET or .NET code, there's no tight reliance on Visual Studio. It does make it a lot easier to do development. And with Visual Studio, even for the past couple revs and definitely with 2013, we have the Express Edition, which is free. So there's no cost there to get started to even use our premium Visual Studio IDE.
Mm.
And along with that, a plugin for Visual Studio that helps you with Azure is the Azure SDK. So you can find this if you use our web platform installer. Is one of the easiest ways to install this. But also, when you start Visual Studio, if you go into a cloud project, you'll see there's an option there that says Download SDK, and that will take you directly to the website to download the SDK. And a couple things you're going to get with that. You're going to get the templates that plug into Visual Studio to help you scaffold the application that you're mm-hmm. going to build. But it's also going to give you something very powerful, the emulator, which we'll talk about in a little bit, but which will allow you to simulate what's going on in Azure locally on your machine.
Right.
And you can also access Azure resources from other languages. It doesn't have to be .NET. We've been focused talking about ASP.NET and .NET. But keep in mind that PHP, using things like Node.js, Python, Ruby, all kinds of things can be run up on Azure. When we first started, we were very .NET-centric because that was our home. But we've expanded now, and we can support a lot of different languages. So as I mentioned, the main point of references the Windows Azure website, and it's a one-stop shop. It has all of our core cloud services, and it's the foundation where you're going to build your applications on top of.
Awesome. And just a note here, we're going to put all these links in the show notes. So there's a website that I'll mention at the end of the podcast where you can jump on there and get all these links that we're talking about here. Now, so let's suppose, like, you know, somebody wants to thinks this is a good idea and wants to get an account with Windows Azure so that they can, you know, start putting some stuff in the cloud. How do you go about it? Let's see. Well, the first thing I think, which is the easiest way to get in, is there is, I believe, like a 1 month trial for $200 worth of computing that you can get at that WindowsAzure.com address. And so that you get in there, and you can use the $200 for any of the compute facilities that we have, kick the tires a little bit, and see if this all the features that Windows Azure has, you know, suits your particular need. However, I think the best value is if you have an MSDN account, and more than likely, if you're in a company that does any Microsoft development, you should have quite a few MSDN accounts lying around. So just ask the right people, and they'll probably get you access to that, because each MSDN account, depending on what level you are, you can get up to 150 hours a month of free Azure services with the Ultimate account, for example. That's MSDN Ultimate, and it kind of lowers down from there on if you get the other SKUs of MSDN. But, you know, $150, you can run a lot of stuff in Azure in a month, and you don't have to worry about being billed over that, because once you use up your $150 worth of resources, you know, things just stop working until the end, until you get to the next month. Of course, if you want to put your billing information, then it'll just, you know, continue billing you as your $150 runs out. But that's your choice. You can make that decision yourself. And really, you know, there's a few things you could do to avoid, exceeding that cap every month. Just don't leave a whole bunch of nodes lying around. If you're not using it, shut it down. You basically pay, you know, for what you use. That's what it all comes down to. If you have a lot of stuff over there that you're not using but it's running, you know, it's just burning your money. So just don't leave stuff running around. And as Cale mentioned, the Azure emulator is no cost. You run that on your machine. It kind of simulates all these compute and storage nodes that we talked about earlier. So you can do a lot of your development on your machine, and then only when you're really ready, so you can you know, put it up to the cloud, and that's when your meter starts running. So Cale, let's talk about, you know, what kind of things work well in the cloud and maybe what don't.
Yeah, this is a big thing that I've seen customers a lot of times, especially working for Microsoft, come to us and want a particular product. So they'll come to us and say, you know, I hear about the cloud, I hear this is the happening thing, I want to be part of Azure, I want to put some stuff on Azure. And while we welcome the enthusiasm, one thing we want to make sure of is we need to identify what things really work well in a cloud, in a public cloud, and what things really don't. So that we can set expectations, and the customer has a good experience. So one of the things is just go through a couple things that work well in the cloud. Apps that are stateless. So years ago we wrote ASP.NET apps and we had all these ways to do state with databases and in-process memory and all these types of things. And that was great. But that does leave something to be desired from a scalability sense. When we think about the cloud, we should think about infinite scale. We should not think about restrictions of a single database being the scalability bottleneck to our application. So keeping that in mind when you have your application, what's it going to take to make my application stateless if it's not? Applications that vary with load, these are huge and work really well in a public cloud scenario. So if we have a business process that runs only the last 3 days of the month, but when it runs, we really need a lot of horsepower. Those are perfect workloads to run on Azure.
Yep.
Apps that are globally dispersed. So when I say globally dispersed, I mean we have a company in the East Coast of the United States, and maybe they have a location in the UK, maybe one in Australia. So when they start spreading out like that, obviously they start bringing up data centers to support that need. We have data centers globally, so targeting those data centers close to where the users are for your particular application is something that works really well in the cloud. And then modern apps. So thinking about the new stuff that we're doing with Windows 8, getting away from some of the legacy type code that we had, those tend to work well in the cloud. When you start getting into things where they need full trust and things like Sajid was mentioning earlier, you have to jump through some hoops and sometimes it's not even possible. So you got to keep security in mind and the way that we're doing our modern apps, and those things tend to run really well there.
Right.
So some of the things that don't tend to run well are things that obviously aren't stateless, but maybe single instance things, things that are very tightly coupled to a particular node. We have to be aware of that. Things like sticky sessions. Yep. You know, years ago, I ran big web farms, and when we did that, one of the big tenets was we had sticky sessions so that we could always pin the session back to a particular node. That's a huge no-no for something that's running into cloud because those nodes can come up and down at will, and we might not even know they're going up and down. So that's something that's you got to keep in mind. And, apps that are really small, like somebody's personal, website or photo site or something, while that's fine and we can spin them up on Azure very easily, it's really not cost effective. We have different models inside of Azure. Sajid mentioned PaaS, and in the future we'll talk about some of the other ones. And some of those are tailored more towards these smaller type sites, and some are tailored more towards the enterprise where you have multiple tiers and application servers and those types of things. So when the apps are super, very, very small, we have to be careful about what we put up there because we might end up spending more money than what it's worth.
Exactly, yeah. Although I think of late we have come up with the Azure websites, and I think we give 10 free websites. And these are very, very low-volume websites. If you have something that you're not expecting a lot of traffic and you don't have a lot of you don't need a lot of storage, that's what you would use it for. So we're definitely looking for looking to expand that market. But the one point I want to make, though, about things that do not work well is if you have an app that, you know, is so tightly coupled to a variety of databases, and all those databases are not in the cloud. They may be at your data center, and you establish this elaborate VPN between the cloud and your data center. That's going to slow things down tremendously because, you know, the latency in the internet is inherent in any VPN is there. And if your app is going to be making all these database calls or backend calls to your back to your data center to get information, that's not a good use of putting the app out there. The apps have to be relatively loosely coupled. If they're too tightly coupled to the database, then, you know, that's when performance will tend to lag. So that kind of, hopefully, I think that kind of covers the basics of Windows Azure and the PaaS model, which I would recommend everybody starts looking at first if you're jumping into Windows Azure. Take a look at those compute nodes and those storage nodes and play around with the emulator. And then finally put something up in the cloud and see how that works. You'll be surprised how well that works. I want to leave you guys with one tidbit that came out today. There is a free ebook introducing Windows Azure for IT professionals. And we're going to put the link in the show notes, but I figured that's something that the folks on the call might appreciate. So, well, I think that kind of comes to the end of our podcast, Cale. It's been fun. It's been our first one, and we'll hope to have a regular rhythm of topics coming up in the weeks to come. So thank you very much for listening to the podcast. If you have any suggestions, please feel free to leave us a comment at the website. It is azpodcast.com, which will take you to another one of our websites on Azure, where we host our actual show notes and everything. And there you can also find links for the topics we discuss in the show, and also the link to the RSS feed that you can plug into your podcast application. You'll be able to find us on iTunes and on the Xbox Music Marketplace very shortly after this podcast. So look for us there. Cale, that's it for me. Thanks. Thank you very much, and see you next time.
Yep. Thanks, Ajit. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use the comments section of the website at azpodcast.azurewebsites.net. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.